It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
We are back and welcome to our show. We've got, I suppose, post-World Cup blues, Brendan. Well, not just the two of us. I'm talking about the country. The post-World Cup blues is the realization that it will take quite a few months before we see the box in action again. Of course, we'll see them in action as individuals for their respective teams. But it's going to be quite a wait.
Well, it's even going to be morning, Liam. Yes, and it's going to even be quite a wait to see them for their respective teams because from what I gather is that they've all been given, the South African guys, of course, have been given a three-week enforced layoff. I know there's some rugby bosses that aren't quite happy about that because they apparently were only told on the quarterfinal weekend that all the box have to get a three-week layoff. And so that means some of them are going to only be back in till end of November, early December.
Well, I would say that the franchise bosses are clearly underestimate what it takes to stand on the back of a bus or on top of a bus for 3-4 days in the hot South African sun. Sure, they obviously were well hydrated, but still, you know, it takes a supreme effort.
Yeah, I just think every time I think of that video of the box on that Safair plane and Frans Malherbe, who really looked like, you know, that father whose wife and kids are in the shops shopping, and he's just irritated sitting in the car. He was done. He was really done. And you and I have probably both been somewhere along the lines on a bus like that. With a team that's won, and it's hard work, and I can't think after 3 days of trying to look excited the whole time. Obviously, they have to because the fans obviously want them to. How some of them must be feeling. There's a video of Malcolm Marks going around as well, of him looking like he was very hydrated. And you know, well done. Mm. You won two World Cups.
Yeah,
I give that to you. You've got to have some sort of celebration.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And obviously, whoever went out there to go and support the box or show the appreciation, I mean, people really did have fun. And I think South Africans just generally brought their A game.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say the sort of almost World Cup hangover, in a way, is a good word for it. Because I had to do some URC action this weekend, and it felt very low. It felt very sort of anticlimax. And I suppose it's going to take a while for us to get back into that way before the URC sort of excites us again, and especially with our teams playing overseas. I thought I would have been used to these 9 o'clock kickoffs, but 9:35 URC kickoffs are quite brutal for you when you have to do a couple on a weekend. So, yeah, it's going to take a while to get back into that.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of getting back into it, next year, Rassie Erasmus stays on. Well, when I say stay on, he's obviously director of rugby, but the mantle of Springbok coach will rest on his shoulders again. That's kind of been confirmed. I mean, we suspected this anyway. Obviously, in that sense, the dynamic doesn't change an awful lot for the Springboks.
No, it doesn't. And I think Rusty's always been contracted till 2025, so we always knew that was probably going to happen. I think we've heard it a couple of times in sort of, and I know it hasn't been officially confirmed, but yeah, it makes the most sense in terms of continuity and in terms of all these other things. And we mustn't, I mean, it's wonderful. I was chatting last night to a couple of guys at the book launch, people from SA Rugby, and they were talking about how we don't realize that some of this group have now won 3 World Cup medals. They've gone bronze, gold, gold. And in the likes of Jesse Creel, Damon Delenda, Andre Pollard, guys like that. And that's quite a feat to do, and not many countries can do that. And no one's ever done 3 in a row. And I think it's a huge task to do 3 in a row because you're going to have to almost have a totally different team. And in terms of the coaching structures, if Rusty doesn't stay on after 2025, whoever takes over, and at the moment the speculation obviously is it's either Deon Davids or Mzwandile Stick. If either of those take over, and you would think in terms of the continuity argument, one of them probably will, they've got a lot resting on their shoulders and a lot of expectations going into a new World Cup. And I think the biggest worry for me is that the same as I had the same worry for Jacques Nienaber when he took over was the fact that he's a coach that hasn't come through the ranks. He's a coach that doesn't have his own sort of coaching CV, if I can put it that way. And I know crowds are fickle and South Africans are quite fickle with these things. You get a couple of losses and suddenly all the pressure's on the guy and the pressure is going to be anyway, but even worse because They'll say, Rossi just put him in the job. So I'm hoping that, and I'm sure, and I say this with a caveat, knowing that we're talking about somebody who's engineered two World Cup wins. So I don't think they don't know this scenario. I think they will plan for it. But often these things sort of happen, things beyond your control in the next couple of years. So that's going to be a very interesting one to watch over the next couple of years, how they develop that new coach, if I can put it that way.
Yeah. I think it would be dangerous for SA Rugby to just say we will look for replacement internally, because once you close the doors and the shutters, you basically close yourself off to a potential opportunity. So, that might be the mindset. And if that's the prevailing mindset, that's fine. But I don't think they should completely shut themselves off from the idea of looking beyond what is currently available to them.
Look, I think the one thing is, in terms of a succession plan, you probably want it to come through in terms of continuity through someone who's been there through the last two World Cups. But the Ian Foster example is the perfect one of how things can go wrong. And I mean, even though they did reach a World Cup final, you ask most New Zealand fans, Ian Foster wasn't their favorite guy through his reign there. And a lot of them are looking forward to the new guy coming in, to Reza coming in. And I worry a bit about that, but saying that, I mean, it's 4 years, a lot can happen in that time, and the box can change quite a bit. But the alternative to that, of course, is that if you bring somebody new in, a Johan Ackermann or a John Dobson, I'm trying to think names off the top of my head, those guys are literally going to come in and start new. So that's the alternative. So I'm not sure which is really the right one. I suppose we'll sort of bumble it through, but in terms of talent, and we're going to talk about that now, is there's such a lot of young talent coming through, and the big thing is going to be to mold that into a World Cup winning team.
Yeah, I mean, if they look outside of what they have at the moment, or who's contracted at the moment, then it shouldn't necessarily be head coach, but I mean, you can get some fresh blood in, some fresh thinking. I mean, that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah,
because I think once you sort of close yourself off, then I think that can be dangerous, because you start believing your own stuff and you don't look wider than that. But yeah, you made the point about talent, because there are quite a few players that there are a couple that will definitely not be available for the next World Cup, because I mean the sunset will arrive for them a lot sooner. And then there's quite a large group of players in the sort of 33, 32, 31 band at the moment, where you can probably ask the question, will they still be around? Because it's a significant group. I mean, obviously, Dwayne Vermeulen won't be there. Dion Free won't be there.
Dion Free will still be there.
Sorry, who?
Dion Free still could be there. I wouldn't be against him being there at 41. So.
Who's to say? There's Willie LaRue. Obviously, he hasn't pulled the pin on his international career, but I mean, he will be, 38, so it's unlikely. Trevor Nyakane, 34, so unlikely there as well. And then, of course, you've got that band of players. You've got, I think, Kobus Reinach, 33, Vincent Koch, 33, Makazola Mapimpi, 33. So that puts them in the danger zone, I suppose. And then you've got Faf de Klerk, Siya Kolisi, Bongi Mbonambi, Frans Malherbe, Franco Mostert in the 32 band. So, there's quite a few. And then just there's a couple, obviously, of 31 that we can talk about in a moment as well.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen now, and there's enough examples in the last couple of years, the Skalk Britzes, Dion Faries, and even the Johnny Sextons of this world. I mean, this weekend I was watching Willem Alberts play again. He's, 39. So, I mean, there are these players that tend to play a lot longer nowadays than we'd expect them to. But, the problem is with that, even all those names you mentioned, if you get two or three of them to go through, I think you're going to be lucky. I don't think you're going to get more than that. And
exactly.
I would probably put sort of like money on it being a prop or somebody like, one of the front row guys that does it. I don't think we're going to see any backline players go that far. And the danger in that is that, I mean, and they've done very well to keep this group together, but now the big problem is, I won't say problem, but the big challenge is to get the new guys in. And they've already started that. And I think that's where, if we go back to the Wales game last year in Bloemfontein, where they made 18 changes, I think that's the perfect example of, everybody was up in arms that we'd lost the test. I think that was the perfect example of how they were looking forward to the next group It's going to be interesting to see how they manage their transition, because there's no lines to it now. You can play around a lot more, but yeah, there's an expectation. You're double world champion, so everyone wants you to carry on winning.
In fact, that Bloemfontein test against Wales is an interesting example, in that there's a couple of guys who haven't played for the box since. There's Kutsia, there's Fassi, there's Mpunu, there's Elstad, I think.
Yeah, probably, if I remember.
No, I think he played again after that. I think he went to Australia. But there is somebody else, Ruan Norkia, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of guys there. I mean, it's... you don't want to say that the international door has been shut on them, but I suppose if you look at Elstad at 33, he's unlikely to play another World Cup. But some of the others are younger, and you know, who's to say that they can't make a return? Yeah. It's almost like that test against Wales as well in Washington, Rassi and Jacques' first one when they came in as a coaching duo in 2018. Lost to Wales in Washington, and it was a game the box should have won. And there's a number of guys who had to wait their turn to get back in. Oxenchi is probably the most notable example of a player who had to wait 3 years to get another crack.
Yeah, and I think if you go through, we can go through probably positions in that. I mean, if you look at the front row, I mean, we're probably not going to have most of that front row, but there is an Oxenchi there. You've got some young hookers coming through. Johan Krobbelaar is an obvious one that I can't see not playing for the Springboks in the next couple of years. Joseph Dweba is still around at that stage. I think you look as well a bit further, someone like Asinati Ntlagbakanye. Pronounce that right. And I mean, just what he can do with his rather bulky frame, and he's a pretty decent scrummager as well. There's some good Karat Stienekamp, who scrummed very well in Argentina. Yeah,
he's 26. Yeah, so he's very much certainly in that group.
There's definitely guys coming through in the front row. At locks, I mean, yeah, you'd mentioned the Ruan Nokia, Salman Marat. If you can obviously caveat say if he doesn't get injured, another.
Yeah, what is he? 24.
Yeah, he's 24. Around there. So, I mean, if you look at that, there's definitely some blocks coming through.
Lord de Jager, I mean, what is his status? He's 30.
Yeah. I mean, and then you look at obviously there's a bunch of these sort of 5-7 forwards that are around as well. So yeah, I don't know. I think there's enough talent. These forwards we never have a problem with in this country. Mm. Just look at the
let's. Sorry, I was going to say, let's take a step back for a moment. And in that band of players who are 31 years old, you give me your selection of who do you think is most likely to play in the next World Cup. I present to you Steven Kitsoff, Eben Etzebeth, Peter Steph Tatoe, Damian Dalende.
Interesting. All four of them, their bodies take quite a battering, all four of them. But I've learned in life not to bet against Eben Etzebeth or Peter Steph Tatoe.
Yeah.
We were, in fact, joking last night with a book where they talked about Brian Lima's tackle on Derek Hogarth, and somebody in the audience quipped, that wasn't the biggest tackle at the World Cup. Ask Jordy Barrett, seven times. And I mean, Peter Steph Tatoe, there's a meme going around of Peter Steph Tatoe, sort of a map of the field, and says his heat map for his tackles, and it's in the shape of a goat. So, I mean, I don't know if those guys can keep up that sort of punishment. I think Kitsy could probably. I'm not sure the other guys.
Yeah. I think Kitsy will probably be okay.
Yeah. You got to remind me who's all 31. I don't have that list in front of me, but who else are we talking about?
Okay, so then you've got the guys who are 30 as Quagga Smith, Jean Klein, Marvin Ory. They are 30. So they also sort of in a bit of a... In the amber zone.
Yeah, I could see probably somebody like Marvin making it. More 5 lock than a 4 lock. I think Jean Klein, the same sort of thing. You also got a Jason Jenkins, who's obviously qualified as well, coming as well. But I think you're probably going to look at a younger set of locks. And as I say, Salman Marat would be the 4 lock for me that probably has been sort of earmarked to come through. If you can obviously. And then, you got to look at, I mean, Ron O'Keefe is definitely one of the guys coming through. Janko Swanepoel, Mentioning some of the Bulls guys.
Yeah. But I think Nurkia would have to be one. I mean, just his line-out ability is something that is quite phenomenal. He would definitely be one. We mentioned Quagga Smith. Now, there's one where there's a sort of a timelessness to Quagga, isn't there? I mean, you don't expect him to lose any of his vitality.
Well, if you had to make me put money down now, on the guy who's going to probably fulfill the Dion Ferry role in the next World Cup, I would probably say Quagga is probably the closest for me in terms of he's the type of guy who could do that. And he's just got this amazing ability that whenever you underestimate him, he proves you wrong. So I'm never going to bet against Quagga Smith. I think he's an amazing player. And he surprised me. I mean, I obviously watched him a lot at sevens level, a lot at the Lions as well. And what he's done at the international level has been pretty amazing with his impact. So I can see him easily doing the Dion Ferry Skull Brits role in the next World Cup. But I think we're probably going to, there's probably a bunch of names that we haven't even thought about who are going to come through as well.
The
next 2 years.
We're
talking about. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at players who have played for the Box in the last 4 years, well, since the previous World Cup, the 2019 World Cup, that weren't part of the squad. I mean, there's a number of names that will pop up. Thomas de Toey, for instance, who will be, what will he be, 30, I think? Well, he'll be young enough, let's put it that way. I mean, he's not that advanced.
And he's one of the unlucky ones because he's always that guy who's that six prop and hasn't sort of got the nod. And his versatility is almost counted against him a bit. So I mean, he's definitely one. I don't know, there's I don't see.
I think he's 28 now, Thomas.
Yeah. I don't see too many of the current sort of fringe forward so much. I think when you talk about the younger generation, the Elric Lowe's, the Ivan Reuses, those are the guys you're going to start seeing come through.
Well, there's Jean-Luc Dupree at 28 now. There's Dan Dupree.
Yeah, they're young enough, definitely.
There is, in terms of forwards, I mean, those are the sort of the obvious one. Is Steenkamp, we spoke about earlier. Volko Lowe.
Yeah, he's definitely one. And the way he scrummed on the weekend, I know it was only Zebra, but the way he scrummed at the weekend, I think there's definitely a big case for him in the next couple of years. If you look at those players, there's the biggest thing to me about the Jean-Luc Dupree and the Dan Dupree is that they're already 28. They've had lots of club experience, but they haven't had 50 tests. And that also, that's the one thing that helped the Box through in this World Cup is that was the most experienced Box team ever in terms of caps. And so when it came to those crucial moments, they knew exactly what to do. There was no panic. There was no – and I think that's going to be the challenge is to get this team squad together, that those combinations play together, that they obviously – I think the big thing is to get those guys to get the combinations together to get 50 tests or as many tests as possible, to play as a unit. And not just them, the spine of the team – those are the players, if you want them to go to the World Cup, and that's where Jake was very successful, is identify them early and then get them to play together as much as possible. And in certain positions, we're rather blessed. If you think scrum off, we've got Jaden Hendrickson, Grant Williams, who are both the we've got a number of scrum offs across the country who could easily fill into that role for the next World Cup. But there's other places like Flower, for instance. Sasha Feinberg Ngumzulu is obviously a key guy that you'd want to have a World Cup at this moment. But you're going to need to give him as much play as possible and much time as possible to settle into the position. You've always got a Damien Willemse who will be there. And by that stage, Damien's going to be one of those guys who's going to go through four or five World Cups. But if everything still goes right. But it's just you've got to give these guys time in the seat and in the saddle.
Where does that leave Apalele Fassie and maybe a player like, Fassie's young, he's what, 24, 25? And then you've got a guy like Sibuen Kosi at 27.
Yeah, well, I suppose Sibuen, and you've got to put him in the same boat as Apiwe Deante, who's just come back as well and playing for the Sharks, and by all accounts has mended his ways. And both of them, I think, have got some big question marks above their head at the moment. And just in terms of the ability to stay on the right side of the law and on the right side of mental issues and things like that. And I don't want to make light of it in Spoo's case, but it is a thing that he's going to have to work out for himself. And both of them have got challenges they're going to have to overcome in the next couple of years if they want to make it into the Springbok team. But I think in terms of Fassie, I think he's definitely somebody who's earmarked and somebody who disappointed me in a way because, he had this wonderful breakthrough season. We all thought he was going to be a Springbok for the next couple of years. And then he sort of dropped off. And from what we've heard sort of behind the scenes, there's some elementary skills errors that he makes. If you look at the amount of times he loses the ball in contact.
I mean, it was the Bloemfontein test as well that sort of tainted him.
And that's the type of thing he needs to work on. And I know the Bok management have spoken to him about it. How successful that is, and there's one or two other players that we've heard that they've told them to concentrate on certain skills. Imbros Papiru was one of them. That's why he also sort of fell away from the Bok squad, we heard as well, for a while. And he seems to have rectified it, and the rugby he's been playing in the last year has been pretty decent. I think that's the key to these things, is that there's a certain level. That's the one thing that this Bok team has done. They've set a level and a standard in terms of skills on what they want from their players. And I know it sounds there's no entitlement. They always say those things about there's no arseholes in the team type thing. They're not as bad as the All Blacks saying, good people make good All Blacks, and then they ignore Shannon Frizzell. But there's...
Not the only one, to be fair.
No, there's not the only one. And listen, not throwing stones yet. Everybody's, rugby players do have some complicated lives at times. But there is a standard set in the box. The bottom line is there's a standard set there. And they're quite open with players when they visit the provinces. They tell them exactly this is what's lacking in your game. And then it's up to the player. And I've got the sense, and I've got no evidence for this, but I've got the sense, knowing the way they operate, that if a player doesn't come back into the squad, he probably hasn't fulfilled that request of theirs and what they want him to do. So I think that's the one thing you've got to look out for the next couple of years. And even this weekend, again, the Sharks were, you watch them in the URC, they were the masters of their own demise. They really were poor. And Fussy had a great game. He really had a good game. He made the most carries but the amount of times he lost the ball in contact is a concern still. And he also had one bad mistake where he tried to dive on the ball and it slipped out and Osprey scored. And I suppose that happens to everybody, but it's just those things are quite glaring at times.
Yeah, and then there's another player who dropped off the Bok radar for slightly different reasons, but I would imagine he should be back in the frame come a selectors meeting next year. Warwick Galland.
There is another situation. And the story I've heard behind that is just, I know a lot of the agents, and I don't want to, because we speak to a lot of the agents, and we know a lot of the agents as well, and we know the situations, why they move players at times. And that was just a situation where the wrong guy went to the wrong place. Warwick's not a guy that should be in Paris. He just didn't fit. That fit didn't work. And John Dobson's words, I think, with us the other day was that they trained very little in Paris, and that wasn't for guy that Warwick's build. That wasn't the best.
The Jean Bombay and the pastries.
I think you can see already, and a little bit of we watched him with the Storm, is he's already almost back into that comfort zone where you can see he's a much different player. There's a reason why he's called the boogeyman. He that guy can step anybody as well. And I'd hope he comes back. And he's really a type of player that we need, definitely, in the Springbok team in the next couple of years. Saying that, there's nothing wrong. Chesson Colby's probably still going to be around for a couple of years. He might not make another World Cup. But you've got the Kaden Moodies, the Kurt Arendses, Damon Willemse. So you've got a lot of those players coming.
Well, there's that very interesting band of players who are 29 at the moment. So you've got Andre Estes and Andre Pollard, Malcolm Marks, Cheslin Colby, and Lucanio Am.
Yeah. Well, I can see all of them. In fact, the majority of them I could probably see there, especially Andre probably being at the next World Cup as well. I think It's almost strange that him playing overseas, he sort of drops off the radar and comes back and he's everyone's favourite. And, I mean, you can't argue against 100% kicking record for his or how many games.
No.
So, yeah, no. All those guys I think would be welcomed with open arms. And I think that sort of nucleus and that sort of experience you'd want in a World Cup squad over the next – or in the Springbok squad over the next couple of years.
Mm. And then two guys in the sort of 28 band, or three of them who would definitely be part of the next setup would be Ergis Nyman, Oxenjay, Marco van Staden.
Yeah. Now, I think we're probably going to see a couple more of those guys come through. I think in Nava from Western Province, the Frankie Horns of the Lions, I think there's another. If either of the Chituka brothers get their passport stuff sorted out, which is one of those weird sort of mysteries of rugby. Yeah. We're never quite sure. Nobody ever answers the question about what
it's exactly. It's one of rugby's black holes, isn't it?
Yeah, but if either of them get, because both of them are good enough to play for Springboks. So, if either of them, then they might be in the mix as well. There's just a bunch of young, good players coming through, and we're probably going to see new ones. I'm not too worried. I think the biggest thing to me, if you talk about the third successive World Cup, the biggest challenge is about building this new side in time with the right mix of blend of experience and et cetera, and giving the youngsters enough caps over the next couple of years. And Rossi and them have shown it can be done in 2 years. They've done it twice. If you think the second time, take away the COVID year and you take away the Lions year with those weird bubbles they had, there's no reason why they can't build another squad in the next 2 years and hand it over to another coach. But yeah, these are all variables, and I think they're going to be targets. We all know they're going to be targets, and they're going to have to have the right game. I wouldn't say game plan, but plan, long-term plan, strategy. And the danger is always there that whatever new coach comes in has his own ideas, even if he's been in the system for the last 6 years. And that might not always work.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot to look forward to next season. We don't have the Springboks full roster yet. We do know, however, on the end of year tour, they will play England in November at Twickenham. And that is a match that I think a lot of people are really, really, really looking forward to.
Tom Curry especially, or Bongi especially.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't thinking individuals. I was just sort of...
Listen, I mean, I think the biggest thing about that for the next 2 years is that we haven't seen the fixture list for this new Test Championship. Though that's going to bring its own challenges and probably need a bigger squad anyway to handle that as well. And it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that change as well. I suppose it's too easy to speculate now about everybody and how big that squad will be, but... I think we want to talk about Springbok rugby as much as possible while we still can, because you never know what happens in the next year, as 2020 showed us.
Yeah, that's probably where we have to leave it. You are still on your book tour, so good luck on that front, and we will speak soon.
Yeah, I mean, Cape Town, lovely place to be for a book tour, and we had a lovely time last night, but... I'm going to go back to reality and back to Gauteng today. So it's going to be fun. But yeah, if you haven't bought the book, please go out and buy the book. It's in all the major book shops. I almost said Boekwinkels. Yeah, I see thinking in Afrikaans, talking in English. But it's been great. There's going to be chat again next week. And I suppose we're going to turn to URC action at some point.
We will. It will get all our attention next week.
Till next week, we'll chat to you guys then again, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, and a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.